time is just about up. And it's been nice being with you, and some of you have called in. I appreciate that very much. And I'll be with you again in 3 weeks. But please stay tuned next week to Valerie Jean, who will be with you, and then Jim Wiener. And I'll be again, as I said, in 3 weeks, and bringing you some more interesting records I hope that you will enjoy. Tell your friends about us. Please stay tuned to Brain Damage, some very interesting things on that program. Eric Cawley is always imaginative, and maybe he'll play some of that Radio Moscow. What has been going on there is unbelievable. Might be too early to get radio broadcast tapes from Radio Moscow, but stay tuned. Listen to Eric Cawley, and he'll always present something interesting. This is David Brown saying thank you for listening, and you have been listening to WSB Stony Brook 90.1 on your FM stereo dial. Thank you.
Polaris is our name for the North Star, the star located above the northern axis of Earth. As Earth turns, stars appear to move across the sky, all of them but Polaris. As though it's located at the hub of a wheel, Polaris seems to stand still while the other northern stars circle around it. If you can find the Big Dipper, now in the northwest each evening, you can use it to identify the North Star. First, notice that the dipper consists of two parts, a bowl and a handle. Look at the bowl, then focus on the two outer stars farthest away from the handle. The two outer stars in the bowl of the Big Dipper always point to Polaris. If you draw a straight line between them and continue the line northward, you'll come to a star that isn't extremely bright, although it's the brightest star in a rather empty region of the sky. That'll be the North Star. Polaris itself is at the end of the handle of the Little Dipper, which is less dipper-like than its larger counterpart, and not nearly as easy to see. And here's another clue to help you find Polaris. Take note of your latitude. If you're at 30 degrees north, the latitude of New Orleans and Houston, Polaris will be 30 degrees above your northern horizon. If you're at 40 degrees north, like observers in Philadelphia or Indianapolis, Polaris will be 40 degrees up, and so on. This is Stardate, and if you like our program and would like to join the Friends of McDonald Observatory, send your name and address to the University of Texas McDonald Observatory in Austin, Texas, zip code 78712, and we'll get you some information. For the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
The lunatic is in my head. The lunatic is in my head.
Good evening. It's Brain Damage. We're back on this Saturday night. And boy, what a week it's been. It's been a fun, event-filled week of activities. From hurricanes to race riots to coups and anti-coups. We'll be touching upon bits and pieces of just about everything. And we even have some music for you, so stay tuned to the radio here. Now, we're going to start off, as we usually do, with Moscow Mailbag. Keep in mind, this edition of Moscow Mailbag was made well before things started hitting fans in Moscow. We won't be getting programs that deal with the aftermath of that probably for another 2 weeks, but we'll see what shows up in the mail. So, we're going to hear your questions being answered, or various people's questions being answered, And then we'll come back. We'll be hearing some music from Big Audio Dynamite 2, brand new record that came out a couple of weeks ago. And we will be taking phone calls as well. A new episode of The Tripods has just rolled off the machine that does that kind of thing. And we have an exclusive interview with somebody who was in Moscow when the coup came down. So stay right where you are. Don't even think of going anyplace because brain damage is occupying your radio.
And this is your program, Moscow Mailbag. Here is Joe Adamoff to answer your questions. The first one comes from Mr. J. Garcia of L.A., California. How did your press comment on the results of the Big Seven Summit in London?
I'll just give you some of the headlines. I think they speak for themselves. Headlines from our national papers. I'll begin with the Izvestia. Unprecedented talks in London. We are part of one civilization. A historic Wednesday. Or take the Pravda. 7+1. First time in history. New start in relations. The ice has begun to move. But Moscow News carried an interview with Yavlinsky, one of the top economists who refused to go to London. He said, "The leaders of the Seven will support our movement for democratic reforms, but will consider little effective the measures that we are taking towards a market economy. They will consider them insufficient to achieve results. In the foreseeable future, the Western powers will limit their aid to what they gave in London." Yavlinsky believes the summit was a failure. Now, Pravda wrote that one of the positive aspects of the London talks was the decision to hold a Moscow summit and sign a strategic arms limitation agreement. Pravda continued, "London has become a milestone on the road to a single world economy." It wrote, "We must both get rid of old stereotypes in our thinking, to stop thinking in terms of the Soviet threat or communist plot. Some people in the Soviet Union have bad dreams of a return to capitalism, though many isms have proved to be pseudo-scientific." It's hard for some here in the Soviet Union to pronounce such a word as private property. We must drop all that. Now, can you imagine the Pravda writing all this? Nevertheless, entering the market economy will be a difficult and uphill struggle.
What is the state of your emergency medical service in the rural areas?
Emergency medical services in the rural areas, unfortunately, answer only one half of the calls that are answered in the cities. And often they come 4 to 6 hours or even 8 hours after the call is made. There are not enough cars, and they are badly equipped, sometimes lacking elementary apparatus like cardiographs or respiratory machines. Our collective farms take patients by bus as a rule or truck to the local administration center, where there are doctors. In the villages, we often have stations staffed with doctor's assistants and obstetricians. Then, too, doctors often make regular rounds of villages and render aid, like dental aid, for instance. Now, in very remote areas of the north, and also in the mountainous areas, large local hospitals have their so-called flying doctor services with small planes and helicopters. They make about 70,000 flights annually, which I think is not enough. Some of them fly to herdsmen working in alpine pastures, for instance. But, be that as it may, the death rate in the villages is 30% higher than in the cities, and child mortality is almost 50% higher.
Mr. Garcia also writes, "I read you demonstrated a video of a jump jet at the Paris Air Show. Could you tell me about it?"
Yes, it's the Yak-141, a multi-purpose fighter with a vertical takeoff and landing. Now, would you believe it? Only 3 days before they showed the video, it was declassified. The plane weighs 20 tons. It can lift over two tons of armaments. And the Yak-141 beat the British Harrier in speed of ascent. Its maximum speed is over 1,100 miles an hour, and its ceiling, 9.4 miles. An interesting sidelight. The designers said the experience gained could also be used in civil aviation.
The next question is, how would you assess the state of Soviet-American relations?
I think it is absolutely safe to say today that we are partners, and I'm sure we will soon be saying that we're friends. We've put an end to the Cold War. We stood together in the Security Council decisions on the Persian Gulf crisis. Our presidents hold regular summits. Remember? Geneva. Then came Reykjavik. Washington, followed by Malta. Moscow. Again Washington. And soon Mr. Bush and Mr. Gorbachev are to meet in Moscow. The INF Treaty was a major breakthrough. Now, it'll be the treaty that will cut long-range missiles by 30%. This took 9 years of negotiating. We've embarked on the road to a market economy and are supported by the Big Seven. Well, I think everybody knows that today there is much more understanding and trust, and it looks like we're both heading the right way. It makes one good, I think, to know that the eagle and the bear are standing side by side. And when our Minister of Defense, Yazov, kissed Colin Powell's wife's hand at the airport, you know, our televiewers were very, very surprised. But I guess it's a sign of the times.
And now a letter from John Edwards of Atlanta, Georgia. Are you free to say what you want?
Yes, certainly. After all, political censorship has been scrapped. I pick my own questions and answer them the way I feel they should be answered. And I do not hesitate to voice my own opinion on any ticklish question. I'll tell you a little secret. I don't think the powers that be even know what I'm saying on the air. To be honest, even before Glasnost, I felt more or less at ease, though once in a while, once in a blue moon, it used to be delete this or don't criticize Stalin at such length or something equally irritating. But, you know, if you could just read our press today, I don't think you'd ask this question.
And how do you explain that after 5-6 rounds of voting, the chairman of the Russian parliament was not elected?
I think the first thing to note is that the progressive, the democratic wing, is not united, unfortunately. They must consolidate their ranks, then they'd be unbeatable. There are too many factions and fractions, groups and groupings. That's the trouble with them. Secondly, the conservatives, the diehard party members, are pretty monolithic. You've got to give them credit. In that lies their strength. And I remember once a member of our parliament said, in most parliaments of the world, there are two basic parties or blocs. And I think the sooner we learn that, the better.
How do your crime statistics compare with ours?
Well, per 100,000 of the population, we're about the same as the United States in the number of people behind bars. I'm counting both those under investigation and those that have been sentenced. Crime on the whole is steadily rising, unfortunately, and that includes premeditated murder, serious bodily harm, rape, and so on. In our country, a murder is committed every 25 minutes, and every 8th case remains unsolved. 75% of the murders are committed in a state of intoxication.
John Edwards writes, in the United States, 25% of the students drop out of school before they complete 12th grade. What is your dropout rate?
You must remember that secondary education, that is high school or its equivalent, is compulsory in our country. So at present, 95% of those that enter first grade get a secondary education in one form or another. What this has led to is that teachers will give a poor student, or simply a lazy student, or incapable student, passing marks just because secondary education is compulsory and he's got to have a diploma. According to UNESCO, in educational and intellectual level, our youth, and that includes the number that get college education, in 1953, according to UNESCO, we were third in the world. Today, we're in 42nd place.
And now a letter from Mike Kaufman of New York City. You have so many different ethnic groups, and not all living in friendship, I understand. What ethnic groups are the biggest in numbers?
The biggest are the Russians, about 140 million. Next come the Ukrainians, 42 million. They're followed by the Uzbeks in Central Asia, about 13 million. The Belarusians on the Polish border, 9.5 million. Then the Kazakhs in Central Asia, 6.5 million, and so on down the line. 22 ethnic groups are more than 1 million strong, and 50 are under 100,000. The smallest, the very smallest ethnic group numbers only 500 people, and they are the Negidals. They have their own language and live in the far east in the valley of the Amur River, which borders on China.
Mike also asks, what is the state of your inflation?
I just answered that only a little while ago, a couple of bags ago. Well, I'll put it very briefly. 20 years ago, for every ruble in circulation, there was 1 ruble and 42 kopecks worth of goods in stock. Today, for every ruble in circulation, there is only 11 kopecks worth of goods. In other words, today we have 1/13 of the goods and products that we had 20 years ago. It's sad, but unfortunately, that's the way it is.
How many people in your school speak English?
You see, English is the language that is taught more often than others. The other basic languages are German and French, but I suppose they can read and write for better or for worse. But to speak the language, with the very small number of hours devoted to the study of foreign languages, I think it is difficult for them to speak it. Of course, they can say some very simple phrases or sentences, that yes. But I think, what with our emergence into the world, we need more people with a knowledge of English and other languages.
I guess it's time for a wrap-up joke, Joe.
Okay. Well, a little introduction. Odessa on the Black Sea is considered the satire capital of the country. Well, I understand some very well-known Americans like Irving Berlin and Eddie Cantor both came from Odessa. It's a custom in some cities, like in Leningrad, to fire a cannon at midday, a sort of time signal. All right, now the joke. The wife was cooking in the kitchen and the husband was digging around in the garden. All of a sudden, the cannon is heard. The wife leans out of the window and says, "Abe, why did the cannon go off at this time? Have they brought meat to the butchers?" "No. The big shots have come from Moscow." In another couple of minutes, another shot is fired. "Abe, maybe they did bring the meat. I told you the big shots have come from Moscow." "Well, couldn't they hit them the first time?"
And that was Joe Adamoff answering your questions on Moscow Mailbag. Address your letters to Radio Moscow, Moscow, the USSR. You couldn't do better than write us that letter. Your comments on this show are welcome. Mailbag is on the air every Saturday, Sunday, and Wednesday on the East Coast at 2310 and 0210 UTC, and on the West Coast at 0410 and 0610 UTC.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's Moscow Mailbag for you. Another exciting edition of of that program here on WUSB in Stony Brook. And again, if you want to send your particular questions to Moscow Mailbag, all you have to do is write to them. And please mention that you listen to Moscow Mailbag on WUSB in Stony Brook.
Hello?
I don't know where that person came from. That's the story here on WUSB. The program is Brain Damage, where we have all kinds of disembodied voices floating around and saying all kinds of silly things.
Hello, this is the phone mail system.
There's another one. Okay, they're being piped in here somehow. Well, now we're going to be playing some music. Yes, that's right, music that has just come in, fresh music, as it were. And what will be?
Hi, this is Scott. My office hours are Tuesday, 4 to 5.
Scott, get out of here.
And Friday, 12 to 2.
Scott, all right. That's very interesting, but we don't need to hear your office hours right now. I don't know what's going on here. People are invading my turf. I don't like it. We've got fresh music here, and I'm going to be playing that. Oh, I didn't give the address for Moscow Mailbag. Well, it's very simple. Moscow Mailbag, Radio Moscow, Moscow, the USSR. That's all you have to write. And they'll get your letter, and they'll even send you a little postcard, like one of our listeners got last week, saying that their question will be answered on a certain day and time. We'll be conducting an interview in just a little while, probably in about, I would say, 10, 15 minutes. We'll be talking to somebody who was in Moscow for the coup, and that will be coming up in just a bit. First, fresh over from the U.K., the new record from BAD2. Now, this is not the one that came out last year. Remember, we played that last year. It's called Kool-Aid. And had a lot of the same songs that are on this one. But according to the people involved in the band, that album does not exist. That album was never put out. This is the album that was meant to be put out. So we'll be hearing a few of the same songs, but all of them will have different mixes. And you'll have a couple of different songs as well. Now, the first song we'll hear will be called Rush. If you recall, on the last album, that was entitled Change of Atmosphere, and that is the single for this album right now. Second song will be a live version of Can't Wait, which was released as a studio song on the album that never came out. I Don't Know is a new song, as is The Globe, which is the title track of this record. And finally, we'll finish this side with Innocent Child, which appeared on Kool-Aid, but with a slightly different mix. Side 2 will be next week, and the band consists of, for those of you interested in such things, Mick Jones on vocals and guitar, Gary Stonehedge, bass and vocals, Chris Kavanaugh, drums and vocals, and Nick Hawkins, guitar and vocals. All right, without further ado, new music from Big Audio Dynamite. We'll be back talking to our Moscow correspondent in just a little while. We'll be taking phone calls after that, 632-6901, and also checking in with the tripods as they reach their appointment with Destiny. That's coming up later on.
If I had my time again, I would do it all the same. Fully grown, and I know where it's at. Somehow I stay thin, while the other guys got fat. All the chances that I've blown, and the times that I've been down, I didn't get too high, kept my feet on the ground. Situation now, rush for the change.
subtle change of atmosphere.
I wish I could sing like that. It's not everything, singing, you know. The only important thing these days is rhythm and melody. Rhythm and melody.
Come away. think it were a happy night. Be no better than a homely swain. Sit upon a hill as I do now. Carve out dials quaintly, point by point. Thereby you see the minutes, how they run, how many make the hour full complete. How many hours bring about the day? How many days will finish up the year? How many years a mortal man may live?
Sleep and
rhythm is both the song's manacle and its demonic charge. Rhythm is both the song's manacle and its demonic
where are you going, my beautiful friend? Is this the road that we take to the end? And if we break down, are we left behind? Is this the highway of all mankind?
Axis spins around and round we go. Where we're going, no one really knows. Here we go. Feel the fire way down below.
Come on, baby.
Party time.
Swing, jump, go.
Do what you like.
Gonna have a ball tonight.
Let's have a ball.
Down at the globe.
And have a shave. It's 1 a.m. Let's go out to a rave. One more in before we hit that wave. It's hotter than a microwave. Wave.
Come on, baby.
Party time.
Switch on the show.
Do what you like.
Thank you.
The new album by Big Audio Dynamite 2. And depending upon who you talk to, it's either their first album or their second album. Now, if you listen to this program, you know damn well it's their second album because we played their first album several months ago. And several of the same songs were on there with different titles, different mixes. Yeah, they got rid of the wimpy ending on Innocent Child just now. They kind of replaced it with something more orchestral. And, yeah, they were sampling a Clash song, isn't it? Something on The Globe, the song we heard before this one. A sample of Should I Stay or Should I Go? And that song featured Gobblebox and Sypho, the human beatbox. You may recall him from Come On Every Beatbox. Well, we'll hear side two next week. Actually, it's kind of ridiculous because it's a CD. There aren't really sides, but I know where the side would begin if it was an LP. And next week we'll hear the remaining five songs on this record, or CD, whatever it's called. Program is Brain Damage. This is Eric Corley with you until midnight. And briefly looking at the news, we have a special guest who's holding on the phone right now, and we're going to sort of lead into this very smoothly, so take a listen. Soviet President Mikhail Gorbachev is hinting there may be even more radical changes ahead for the Soviet Union. The Soviet news agency TASS says that in a meeting with U.S. Ambassador Robert Strauss today, Gorbachev spoke of an increased need for cooperation with America. Strauss, who presented his credentials to Gorbachev, says the Soviet president mentioned dramatic changes in store for his nation, but Strauss wouldn't elaborate further about the meeting. Hopefully it doesn't involve too many changes of boundaries, but we'll just have to see, won't we? Gorbachev has already made it clear he's ready to shatter traditions after this week's botched coup. He resigned today as the leader of the Communist Party, a post long considered synonymous with being Soviet leader. But before stepping down, Gorbachev nationalized the party's property and called for the dissolution of its Central Committee. He joined tens of thousands of Muscovites attending a funeral service for three coup victims in Moscow today. Gorbachev awarded the young men the title Hero of the Soviet Union, and Russian President Boris Yeltsin hailed them as Russia's saviors. The three men were killed when they attempted to stop an armored convoy from advancing on the Russian Federal Parliament building during the coup. And the Ukraine is the latest Soviet republic to declare its independence. Ukrainian lawmakers issued the declaration today and scheduled a referendum in December to ratify their decision. Resolution would put the Ukraine on the same footing as the three independence-seeking Baltic republics in Georgia. And some Bush administration officials offer the rosy prediction that independence could be granted the Baltic states within 6 months. It's a reflection of the upbeat mood that's replaced the shock and despair following initial word of this week's coup. Assistant Secretary of State Lawrence Eagleburger says although he wouldn't want to ever praise a coup, it appears the U.S.-Soviet relationship is better off now that it's over. Well, it was quite a week, and rather shocking when all this began late Sunday night. I remember listening to the radio and hearing reports that Gorbachev was resigning because of health problems. He was resigning as president, and you know, at first I thought it meant that he was just simply resigning the post of president, since he holds so many other posts as well, and I didn't really see the significance in it. But as the night progressed, it became obvious that something was seriously wrong, and that everything that he had strived for, moved his nation towards, was in jeopardy. And what did that mean for us? What did that mean for U.S.-Soviet relations and freedom in the 20th century and all that kind of thing? It was rather frightening. I didn't get to see a lot of it on TV because I got hit by a hurricane and didn't have power for 4 days, but from what I heard on the radio, these were most dramatic times. Now, we have an eyewitness to the events in Moscow on the telephone right now. And, you know, I'm kind of jealous, actually, because I would have wanted to have been there myself. This is Rop. He is currently in Amsterdam. He's just returned from Moscow. And well, let's make sure you're still there on the line, because it's 5 o'clock in the morning where you are. Are you still awake?
I'm still awake.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, now, when did you first get to Moscow?
Well, I got there about the 6th of the month, so I got there long before all this started, and I was there for a week. And then I left for a town called Odessa, which is quite close to the Krim, where Gorbachev's dacha was located.
Sorry.
And then after that, I left back for Moscow, because we were in Odessa without a visa, without any official papers. And you need, in the Soviet Union, to travel, you need a visa for each town you go to. And it would have been quite a mess if we had been in Odessa when the revolution, or when the coup was staged. But luckily, we were back in Moscow then for a day.
Now, you were in Moscow, it was Monday. What was your first indication that something was happening?
Well, we were staying with people, and as we woke up, we were told that Gorbachev was no longer the president, and by then it was clear that it was a military coup. And the first thing we did to find out what was going on was turn on the TV, because Moscow has 5 TV channels, I think. A few are Soviet TV channels all over the Union, and then one is a Russian TV channel, and then there's a Moscow TV channel, and there's a channel local to that sector of Moscow. So it's really, there's TV on all levels. So I turned on the TV, and there was only test pictures, and only one channel, one of the main Soviet channels, was on the air. And they had a classical piano concert.
So that's
when we realized that something was seriously wrong.
Just seeing the classical concert told you that the regular series of events were not taking place the way they should be.
Yeah, it's like if there's been an accident with a nuclear plant somewhere, you don't start worrying until all sorts of officials tell you in exactly the same wording that there's nothing wrong.
So now, okay, you turn on the TV set, you saw only one TV channel on, playing classical music, you knew something was happening. What did you do?
Well, we went out to the center of town, because we were kind of a ways from where it all took place, so we went to the center. After I called the Dutch consulate, because I thought they might know something about what was going on, and they just said they heard something about tanks, and they didn't know anything themselves. So we went to the center, to the Red Square, which was barred off with tanks and buses, so nobody could get on it. But right next to that is Manege Square. It's on one of the side walls of the Kremlin, and that's where most of the events in the center took place. And well, you immediately saw a large row of tanks, professional crowd control tanks. There were a few tank dozers. There were some tanks that had a lot of machine guns, just very professional crowd control stuff. And there was Black Berets, the Oman, the elite troops. And they were trying to get people to back off from the Manege Square. But the crowd wasn't really demonstrating at that point yet. That was no real demonstrations larger than a few hundred people started until late that night, really until 8 or 9 that night.
What was the mood of the crowd at that point? How many people were there?
happened that day, the first day?
At the point where you walked into the square.
The mood of the crowd, I was surprised because most people didn't really care, and there was people playing on the tanks because the soldiers let people on a few tanks. And there was people playing, and there was a girl fitting a beret to see if it fit her. And I was really crazed because there was people actually, well, not caring and laughing at the military and just shaking hands. And
so it didn't seem as if anybody actually believed that the military could do some nasty things, huh?
Well, it seemed as if people were so numb that they didn't really care who ruled their country as long as there was food in the stores. And since these leaders had on TV promised that there would be food in the stores, they didn't really care. And I think a large part of the Moscow population didn't really give a shit until at the very last moment they saw that they could be on the winning side if they could just step behind the barricades. But that was all later. I think during the first day, we were in the metro, and people just did not care. They were just sitting there staring the same stupid stares they always stared. It really frightened me.
That's interesting. That's something we didn't really hear about. Now, as far as demonstrations against what was going on, when did you see that begin?
Sorry?
When did you actually see demonstrations against the coup begin?
Well, that was that night. We followed a demonstration that was then only 30 people from Manet Square. And it grew as they sort of circled the town, and it grew and it grew. And then when we finally arrived, we didn't even know where it was going at the time. And we marched down a road that we didn't know, which turned out to be the Kalininsky Prospect, the big road going out to the buildings of the Russian Federation where Yeltsin was. And when I looked around to see how big the demonstration had gotten, it was 6,000 or 7,000 people because we were taking an 8-lane highway over its full width. We were marching down down both sides of a highway. And when we got to the barricades and everybody just started climbing over and under and through those city buses that were used as the first barricade, it completely sunk away in the crowd that was already there, which must have been tens of thousands of people at least. And it was getting dark at that point. It was just getting dark. And we were on the front barricades when the first loyal tanks to Yeltsin rolled in. And it was obvious that they were not going to do anything because they had all their hatches open. Some crew members were on top of the tanks as they came to the barricades, and some of the turrets were pointing backwards. And it was ordinary infantry tanks. They had no bulldozers, they had no barrier cutters or other specialized gear. So it was obvious they were not going to do anything. And there was some officer standing on the tanks that was explaining things. And then the barricades were opened and the tanks were let in. And I was right on top of that. And I had never been that close to a tank before in my life. And it was kind of weird.
Yeah, I can imagine. What was going through your mind as all this was happening? I mean, going to the Soviet Union for the first time in your life is enough of an adventure. But actually being there when something like this is taking place, I mean, were you frightened? Did you want to get out of the country? How'd you feel?
Well, in the beginning, I was more frightened than... I was frightened when there was no resistance and it just looked as if it was going to be a Stalinist regime for a while and nobody was doing anything. And at that point, I just said, well, let's get out of here. This is not going to be fun. And only as we saw the barricades and we saw the whole resistance building up, did it get interesting. At that square, we feared a moment that things would go wrong, as later proved they would go wrong because three people died. But we feared for a moment that things would go wrong. But then again, if you're in the middle of something like that, you don't think that you might get shot. You just think that people might get shot.
Now, tell us about the three people that got killed. Were you near where that happened? How exactly did that come about? The tanks were advancing?
Well, the thing is, I left Moscow on Tuesday afternoon, which is not at the end of the coup. That happened all the way at the end. So I can... What we saw happening was the whole movement around that Russian parliament building growing, but I didn't I wasn't there for the actual attack of the tanks.
I see.
So I don't know anything about that. I was there until Tuesday late afternoon.
Okay.
But what was interesting is the way they from that building, how they chose to communicate with the people, because people in Moscow had no information at all. I was at a point where I would have given a few fingers for a shortwave radio. I could have brought one, but I didn't because it was too heavy. But people were just dying for information because there wasn't anything. There was radio, government controlled, and there was TV that was government controlled, and there wasn't anything else really.
Now, how did information really get around? And just word of mouth?
Yeah, mainly. And people were stenciling with old stencil machines. They were stenciling Yeltsin's declarations and anything that was real information, and they were sticking it on walls of metro stations, and there was crowds of people forming around those declarations, which was really interesting. It all went back to very simple means of communication. But the best trick, I thought, was, and this must have been planned ahead because somebody saw this happening, that they had a big advertising blimp, a Zeppelin, and they had on the cable of the Zeppelin, which they lit up next to the Parliament building, they had the flags of all the free republics, Russia, the Ukraine, the Baltic republics. They had them hanging on the from the cable of that Zeppelin, so that when the radio said that there was no more resistance, and when the radio said that demonstrations were not allowed, people of Moscow could just look out their window and see those flags hanging there and see that it wasn't true.
Now, I mentioned there are a lot of rumors going around, too. Did you hear anything that later proved to be untrue?
Well, we always had to be with people that could translate for us since we didn't speak Russian. And that's another interesting thing. The crowd that was with the Russian parliament was a totally different crowd than the ordinary Moscow metro crowd, because in Moscow you can try to communicate with people in any language but Russian and get no reply at all. You'd be very lucky if in an entire metro carriage one or two people speak English.
That's interesting. I always notice in the demonstrations that there's always a few signs, at least in English.
But the thing is that in the crowd at the Russian parliament, almost everybody we spoke to spoke at least either English, French, or German. So we could at least sort of talk to anybody in the crowd, which was very interesting. It was just a different selection of Muscovites.
Now, at what point did you actually hear that the coup had failed? Where were you at that point?
We were home. We were in a train at home when we bought a newspaper. But when we saw that it was going to fail, when everybody sort of saw that it wasn't working, that was in that Tuesday, the second real day of the coup. Everybody in Moscow was sort of, the resistance movement was only growing, and there was this growing feeling of, if this is going to be repressed, they should have already done it.
But why do you think that they didn't go after Boris Yeltsin to begin with? It seems to me that he dealt the coup the really fatal blow there, and if you know, anything, he posed more of a threat to the new regime than Gorbachev himself. Why did they not go for him immediately?
That's one of the questions. The main theory, but that's again from the Dutch media. The main theory behind that is that the coup was planned in such a small group because they couldn't risk it, the word getting out, that they didn't have time to plan all these things, and they didn't really plan a coup. They planned to get Gorbachev's cooperation. They planned to coerce him into cooperating with the whole thing. And since he didn't, since he flatly refused, they had to stage a coup, but it wasn't, they didn't set out to start a coup in this way. They planned, the whole plan had been different from the start. That's the main guess that people have here.
So they weren't counting on people standing up for their beliefs, I guess.
Well, not only that, they weren't counting on not getting the cooperation of Gorbachev if they pushed him far enough. I think the fact that Gorbachev did not cooperate, and the fact that so many people acted on their own, sure, not just Yeltsin, but There's complete newspapers that refuse to stop publishing. There's radio stations that set up a pirate station and just abandoned their studios. There's so many people acted on their own without even waiting for whether Yeltsin was going to tell them to. I think that was their main miscalculation.
So you think the people basically are responsible for how it turned out?
Yeah, I think so. I think you have to remember also that as far as the army, somebody in Moscow told me that, because I had expected the army to be a completely hammer of steel. There would be no soft elements in the army. But you have to remember that the people that are now in the army, the boys that are in the army, the draftees, were 12 when Gorbachev came to power. They never saw the Brezhnev regime as it was. They never saw a hardline regime. They were brought up with perestroika, with a free press, with things like that. So somebody told me that, and that's true. I mean, I spoke to some soldiers, as good and as bad as it went, and with some people that spoke to soldiers in Russian, and they didn't want to start a Stalinist regime. They were following orders, but not too far, like any soldiers in other countries, I guess.
Well, now let me ask you one final question, because I know it's late there. The sun must be coming up. The way the media has portrayed this, is there anything that you feel is grossly inaccurate, having been there yourself?
I haven't been following the media on it, because I was in Moscow most of the time, and there wasn't any media except the state. No, I don't see any gross misconceptions, except for the fact that the people that stood up were only a percentage of the people. You have to remember that Moscow is a city of what is it, 11 million, or 7 million official, something like 10 million people. And at the square where it all happened, well, at the height of it, there must have been 75,000 people, maybe 100,000 people. That's only a very small subset of the population. I think, personally, that most of the population of Moscow didn't really care at first who was in power, because they were too busy feeding themselves.
Well, what do you think the population of the rest of the country felt?
I don't know, because I wasn't in the rest of the country at that point, and really, if you wanted to know what the total overview of the situation was, it's better to be at home in America or anywhere and watch TV than to be in Russia at that moment. But in all of the Soviet Union, one general thing to say is that at the moment it's incredibly difficult to feed yourself. It's incredibly difficult to pay the rent, to pay the bills. There's an incredible bureaucracy, not just if you have the money, but you have to stand in line for everything. I mean, you're not used to standing in line for 4 hours just to be able to pay the rent, even if you have the money, and then stand in another line for 4 hours to pay the gas bill.
No, I have to say I'm not used to that. It was an inconvenient week for me, not having power, but standing in line, that's something I don't know if very many Americans could take for a long period of time. But
or anybody that lives in a country where you don't know that type of shortage, or that type of bureaucracy, I should say.
So now give us your prediction here as to what's going to happen, say, over the next year.
I don't know. All the Russians we spoke to told us that this winter is going to be very, very, very decisive. If there is food in the stores this winter, it's the reforms and democracy have a chance. If there is no food in the stores, some parts of the Soviet Union are going to be total chaos, whoever is in power.
Okay, well, listen, thanks for talking with us this evening, this morning, for you. And it's good that that you got back safely and everything worked out. We were kind of worried about you over there for a while.
Well, it was my pleasure talking to you and the listeners. Well, see you around.
Okay, and hopefully your next place that you visit will bring you even more adventure.
I hope not. Okay. See ya.
Bye-bye. We're speaking with Rob over in Amsterdam, who just got back from Moscow after being in Moscow for probably, well, the most interesting few days that you could possibly be in Moscow if you weren't alive back in 1917. And people are saying that what happened there is more significant than what happened in 1917. Well, time will prove that too, I suppose. It's 18 minutes after 11 o'clock, and yes, we're late for the tripods, I know. People are passing notes and making faces. Well, it's just, you know, world events have kind of pushed it aside, but we will be getting to it in just about, I guess a minute, okay? How's that? But first, this promotional announcement.
Did you ever wonder about the vast variety of musical rhythms that stretch throughout the continent of Africa? If so, tune in every Thursday evening between 7 and 8:30 for the African Beat. My name's Chris, and you're invited to join me every Thursday evening to explore the traditional and popular rhythms of the African continent that have so widely influenced today's music. So keep it tuned here at 90.1 FM for non-commercial alternative radio at its best. Long Island's first station of the 90s, WUSB, in Stony Brook.
Radio Free Long Island, with special handwritten permission from the Three Village Tobacco Farms, proudly presents the exciting adventures of the Tripod Family, the story of one of America's most illustrious families and their struggle to find peace and happiness in the suburbs of Long Island. This week we check in on Charlie, who is currently resting at the Amalgamated Hospital in Huntington. And as we look in on him, we hear the nurse say,
"Now just try to sit back and relax, Mr. Davenport. The doctor will be in real soon for your shot."
Thanks, nurse.
You're welcome.
Do you think you can answer me one question?
I suppose so. Well, what it is?
How long do you think it'll be before I can go back home again?
Why? Don't you enjoy being here at the Amalgamated Hospital of Huntington?
Oh, no, it's not that. I don't mind being here at the Amalgamated Hospital of Huntington, even though I did sue you folks once for malpractice. It's just that I'm kind of homesick for my comfortable home in the middle of beautiful suburban Long Island.
Oh, I see.
I'd kind of like to see how the front lawn is doing and how the paint job on the house is holding up.
Yeah, I see.
I kind of miss my old Bulgarian car.
Uh-huh.
And my new Bulgarian stepman.
Uh-huh.
It's been a while since I've heard anything from the old neighborhood.
Uh-huh. Well, I wish I knew what to tell you, Mr. Davenport. It's all up to the doctor. Whatever he say goes.
Yeah.
But I must say, I think you're pretty lucky just to be here.
Right. Oh, you mean after being shot at like that?
No. I mean after having our hospital food. Damn.
That's not very funny, nurse.
Oh, Mr. Davenport, yeah, you have to have a really good sense of humor, especially in a hospital.
Well, you people don't have to eat the food in this place. That's all I know. You don't have to stick around here all the time, but I do.
There, Mr. Davenport. I'm sure the doctor will let you go home now real soon. As soon as that there gunshot wound heals.
I don't even know what's going on with the tripods. Yeah, you wouldn't believe this family that moved in next door to me, nurse.
What did you say their name was, Mr. Davenport?
Tripod. They come from California, a place called Big Bear City. And they're probably the strangest people I've ever met.
Well, with a name like Tripod, they must be a very strange bunch of people.
Oh, they are, nurse. Indeed, they are. And you never know what's going to happen next with them, I can tell you that.
All right, Miss Davenport. Now, why don't you just sit back and relax now? Here comes the doctor with your shot.
You know, maybe I was wrong to sue this hospital. It doesn't seem as bad as I thought it was. I guess it's always possible to misjudge a place. Oh, hello, Doc.
Good morning, patient. How are we doing this morning?
Oh, I don't feel too bad. I was hoping I could go home soon, in fact. Do you think I might be able to?
Sure.
Yeah?
You can go home whenever you want to.
Oh.
Wait a minute. Don't move. I got a shot for you.
Are you feeling okay, Doctor?
Oh, yeah.
You don't look so good.
Hey, wait a minute. Who's the doctor here? Anyway, I feel fine. Now, roll down your sleeves so I can give you this here... Whoa!
What's that?
And so, as we look in on Charlie for the first time in a while, we see that he's in rather interesting hands at the Amalgamated Hospital. You want to be with us next time, when we'll hear the nurse say...
That's the fifth time you've fallen down today. What have you been drinking?
That's next time on The Exciting Adventures of the Tripod Family, a presentation of Radio Free Long Island and the Three Village Tobacco Farms. This is Don Topeka.
Up all you Irish feeling folks, this is something in a something happening at WUSB. Sin. It's Heartbeats Reggae 10th anniversary, and to celebrate they're giving away a trip to the land of Jah, Jamaica. All you have to do is get a postcard right, win a trip to Jamaica in a heartbeat on it, and send it to WUSB 90.1, SUNY at Stony Brook, New York. 11794-3263. We will submit it for the grand prize drawing. Also, do stay tuned to WUSB Reggae Shows for more fabulous Heartbeat CD and tape giveaways. What a ting! Ja love. Give thanks, Irie.
Yeah, keep those postcards pouring in here. At WUSB in Stony Brook, where it's 25 minutes after 11 o'clock. And yes, this is Brain Damage. We're taking phone calls at 632-6901, area code 516. And while you're rushing to the phones and making those phone calls, let's reminisce a bit about what has gone on this past week. We've talked to somebody who was in Moscow for the coup, and while that was going on, we were being hit by strong winds here in Long Island, usually pleasant Long Island. This Monday, though, we were hit by Hurricane Bob, and what a rude awakening that was, as many of us were without power for several days. And it's kind of ironic, too, because the full brunt of the storm wasn't felt here. It was felt out east, yet the things just weren't fixed as quickly here as they were out east, I guess because they felt they should go where the storm hit the hardest. But it's kind of silly to be hit by, 30-mile-an-hour winds and not have power for 4 days. But I guess that's just the way things work out in a world like this. But it was the first major hurricane we've had in, 6 years? Yeah, 6 years. And it wasn't really a hurricane here. It was a tropical storm. But it was something, something better than what we usually get, which is nothing. So hopefully there'll be more. I mean, Gloria began with a G, right? So that meant there were seven storms altogether. Gloria was the seventh. Now, Bob begins with a B, so that was only the second. So that means there could be more. There could be lots more. I mean, imagine being hit by three of them in 1 year. Ah, wouldn't that be something? But things are normal now. The weather calls for pretty boring conditions. Let's see here. Periods of fog developing. Yeah, fog. So not much is going to be happening there. Low will be in the low 60s. Sunday partly sunny and pleasant. High in the mid to upper 70s. Sunday night and Monday partly cloudy. Low near 60. High Monday in the mid to upper 70s. So we got cloudy and pleasant and fog. Nothing's going on. Nothing at all. But I'd like to know how many people out there survived. Well, actually, I guess everybody survived. But what you did to survive. Because, without power, there's so much you can't do. You can't watch television. You can't, unless you have a battery, listen to the radio. Some of our phones were out. A lot of people just wound up, you know, going to sleep when it got dark and waking up when it got light. And, boy, what a pathetic existence that was. Fortunately, it didn't last 10 days like last time. 632-6901. Let's get some phone calls in here. What else is going on in the world? Okay, Israel's housing minister says the U.S. has backed off assurances it made to lure Israel to the peace table, citing foreign sources. Ariel Sharon says the U.S. doesn't intend to guarantee that Palestinians from East Jerusalem or the PLO will be kept away from the negotiations table. Sharon has long been an opponent of the peace conference. A U.S.-based human rights group gives political leaders, militant Sikhs, and lawless government security forces shared blame for a decade of escalating violence in India's Punjab state. Asia Watch says at least 4,000 people died last year in the continuing strife. It says the failure of local officials to prosecute the killers of Indira Gandhi in 1984 drove many Sikhs to support the militants' campaign for independence. And finally, an Australian prospector has literally struck it rich. Peter Milik found a giant black opal in Western Australia. I don't think I'd know what a black opal was if I found it, but this guy apparently did. Found it in Western Australia, according to his agent. His agent? Now he's got an agent. You find an opal and you get an agent. That's incredible. The 36-pound gem is valued at $4.7 million. Well, beats the hell out of Lotto, doesn't it? 632-6901. Let's get some phone calls here. What's going on out there? Good evening.
Good afternoon. Hello.
How are you doing?
Several things to banter around here.
Okay, go ahead and banter.
First of all, Mr. Radio had brought up an interesting topic last week during News 12.
I guess you've just been waiting all week long to respond to that, but go ahead.
According to the meteorologists, I want to put a good word in for Sally Ann Mosey, if she's listening.
This was the week for meteorologists to really, prove themselves. So tell us, did this one let you down or what?
They hit it right on the head with the hurricane. You have to give them credit. Go ahead, give them credit.
All right, they are giving credit where credit is due. What exactly did they say concerning this hurricane, that it was coming or that it had left or it was currently here?
They predicted it right on the nose. They called for 100-knot winds and we got them, and you have to blame Loco for your troubles, not the weather people.
Well, I don't know how you could blame the weather people, but I do blame Loco for not, you know what those idiots did?
What?
And I don't feel bad calling them idiots. They've got their emergency hotline numbers, right?
Mm-hmm.
They've got their Eastern Suffolk and Western Suffolk and Nassau County numbers. Okay, now, we lost power at 10 o'clock in the morning
mm-hmm.
on Monday. And so, you know, I go to the phone to call them. And, of course, it's busy. And it remains busy. And, in fact, I never got through on that number. It was busy continually from, like, 4 o'clock in the morning, no matter what time you called. But I did manage to get through on one of the other numbers. And I was put on hold for about, I'd say about 20 minutes with all kinds of little recordings. And then eventually it just hung up. And so I got a dial tone. Then a couple of days later, I was able to get through again on that number. And the person there said, sorry, I can't help you because you're not in Western Suffolk, you're in Eastern Suffolk. Now, I always thought the Three Village area was in Western Suffolk anyway, but it shouldn't matter. I should be able to call the Nassau County number and have somebody deal with it because they all use the same computer system. But instead they were saying, oh, no, you've got to call this number. Despite the fact that it's continually busy, you have to call that number and not this number.
Well, and I think they use the Amiga in Western Suffolk.
The Amiga?
The Amiga computer, yes.
You're saying they use different computer systems for different parts of the island. I wouldn't be surprised if they were using Commodores.
The VIC-20 is probably,
yeah.
But... Okay, secondly on the agenda, ask the manager.
What about the manager?
The show.
What are we talking about? Which manager where? That show's still on the air. I remember watching that years ago when I had cable.
It's a great show.
It is a great show.
You hear the theme? Do you remember it? Do you remember the theme?
Well, I don't remember the theme. I remember the pro... Is this on live or you have it on videotape?
Live.
The show
of the 90s. Your questions and comments are addressed by TV 38 Zone.
Oh, that's incredible. That's incredible.
It's still on the air.
That's got as much of a following, I would say, as Gene Scott does.
Okay, enough of that.
Do you get Gene Scott on your cable?
Gene Scott.
Dr. Gene Scott to you, I guess.
Channel is that?
I don't know. I don't think it has a channel. I think he just appears everywhere. Mm. Actually, you know, I think he's on channel 61 or something late at night.
No, we don't get that channel. Secondly, how was your cookout today? Mr. Radio called me. He said you had a cookout.
I had a cookout?
Apparently, yes.
Well, what made him think that?
I don't know. Mr. Radio knows it all.
Mr.
Okay,
Radio
take
does...
care. Have
no.
a great week.
Yeah.
Mr. Radio for Pope. That's all I have to say.
Okay, we'll consider it. Thanks so much for calling. 632-6901. We're only on till midnight tonight, folks. So if you're thinking of calling beyond midnight, you won't be able to get through because we won't be on. Last week we were on for four... No, were we on for... Yeah, we were on for 4 hours last week. And it was a lot of fun. But this week we're only on until 12. That's why I stress... I really do stress from the bottom of my heart that that the calls have to come in now. 632-6901. I'll go to the phones as soon as one more light lights up. How's that? Got some activity there, but we need more than just that. 632-6901, area code 516. It's also been a crazy week as far as racial stuff that's been going on. I was passing through a particularly hot spot in New York, the Crown Heights section of Brooklyn, which took quite a while to find. I'd never been there before, and I had to find it on a road map. But that was on Wednesday night when tensions were really boiling over. And it was pretty frightening, you know, going into this place where you didn't know what was really happening. You saw cops everywhere, flashing lights, mobs of people. And... if you haven't been following the news, or really you should follow the news, but if you haven't been following the news, it all started on Monday. And, of course, I didn't know anything about this because I was too busy worrying about the coup in Moscow and not having power, so I wasn't even able to follow what was going on in Brooklyn. But what had happened was there was an accident where a Hasidic man ran over two black kids, one of which died, one of which was put in critical condition, I believe. And that started all these racial tensions, which if you think about it, is really kind of stupid. I mean, it's not like somebody would go out and aim for a particular racial group. But I think what was happening was it was a response to the way that it was being handled by police and authorities of various kinds. Unfortunately, the people that they were angry at were not the ones that received the brunt of the violence. Somebody was stabbed to death. A Hasidic Jew from Australia, I believe, and it just kept getting worse and worse. And I think things are starting to calm down now because people are realizing that this is just not going to get anywhere. But on Wednesday night, it hadn't quite reached that stage yet, and things were still at their boiling point. And I was going down one street, and all these people were running up to my car saying, "Go back, go back." You know, they were gesturing for me to go back because... they really did seem to be very concerned. There was a riot in progress further up the street, and they were concerned that since I was white, I could get in a lot of turmoil by going down the street. Of course, you don't see that anywhere. You would read Jimmy Breslin's column about how he got attacked, which definitely was not a good thing. But you might miss the fact that there's people out there, and that people that actually are willing to... you know, to help other people out, regardless of their color or religion or what have you. Most people think logically in situations like this. Most people just want to, you know, get out of it safely and make sure other people don't get drawn into it. I wasn't, you know, I didn't have anything hostile or violent occur, but it was just made very clear to me that I had to turn around for my own safety. And that's something that, I don't know, I guess you pick things up from that. I don't know many people who would be crazy enough to do what I did, though. 632-6901. Couldn't be in Moscow, so I figured Crown Heights was the next best thing. Good evening.
Yeah, I'd just like to make a comment about last week.
What about last week?
That Mr. Radio guy.
Why is everybody talking about Mr. Radio? I don't like people talking about Mr. Radio.
I know.
Anybody out there wants to talk about something real.
I don't want to give the guy any publicity, but I just like to make
Well, I think you are giving him publicity if you're going to talk about him.
Well, I tried to call in last week, and I couldn't because this guy was on the air so long, talking about such meaningless garbage.
Okay, so listen. You're on the air now. Talk about something meaningful.
Okay, well, I think Boris Yeltsin will probably be the next head of the Soviet Union.
Yeah, you think so, huh?
Yeah, it seems to me in 3 days he had an awful lot of power.
Do you think this coup was engineered by anybody, you know, to sort of... you think Boris Yeltsin might have been behind it?
I don't think so.
No?
No, it seems to be like the KGB guys and the few head military people.
Uh-huh. Because, yeah, Boris Yeltsin comes out really smelling like a rose in this this particular instance. It's, you know, it's incredible. He's bossing Gorbachev around now.
Yeah, the other day I was watching the news and... they had, like, a conference,
uh-huh.
And Yeltsin was sitting in the middle. And doesn't, like, usually the head guy sit in the middle?
Usually, yeah.
Gorbachev was off to the side.
He was. I think he is sinking. He is sinking fairly rapidly. Now, okay, let's agree on this. Boris Yeltsin will be the next leader, at least of Russia.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
What kind of a leader will he be?
I think he'll be a pretty good one.
Yeah?
He's voted on by the people. He seems to be a pretty popular leader. And he seems to be doing a good job for them. They like him.
Uh-huh.
You know?
But will he put food on their tables?
As far as I'm concerned, I feel he will, to an extent, you know, the best job that he'll do. Because, I mean, you know, that economically the country's falling apart.
Yeah.
And I think he'll put as much food as he possibly can on their tables. I'm not going to say they're going to have a 9-course meal every night.
But, well, the nation is going to be on the most favored nation list very soon for the United States. That ought to help a little bit.
Yeah.
Hopefully things will get easier. I don't know. It's rough times and people aren't very patient.
Well,
I mean, they've been living, you know, in bad conditions now for decades.
Doesn't the Soviet Union have, like, a lot of oil? Like,
they,
up in Siberian line?
They have some oil. Yeah, they have a significant amount of oil.
Well, why couldn't we do this? Since we pay so many of our farmers not to farm, why couldn't we let them farm to the Soviet Union and we could get the oil from the Soviet Union at a discounted price?
That's an idea. You know, why don't you send that idea into Moscow mailbag? Maybe they'll have a reply for it.
I'll send it to somebody.
Well, I mean, send it because that way at least we'll all hear the answer because I don't see why that wouldn't work.
It seems like a good idea because we're having so many farmers being put out of work. I mean, and these people need the food. Let's give it to them, you know?
Right. Yeah, I think we've been moving a little too slowly here, and this might be enough to sort of shock us into waking up a little. Because, you know, I don't know how you felt on Monday when you saw this coming down, but I felt this real disillusionment, like we had lost a chance.
Yeah.
And it was all going back to the way it was, and, you know, the honeymoon was over.
Mm-hmm.
It was really sad. It was really sad seeing all this disappear, and really quite a rush to see it all come back, you know, 2 days later. I wasn't expecting that. I don't think any of the newspapers were expecting that. If you look at their headlines, they were all saying, oh, yeah, now that we look upon it, it was inevitable that Gorbachev get kicked out and that this would never work. So they were proven wrong yet again the next day.
Yeah, well, the people had a taste of democracy, and the hardline communists that tried to do the coup, that they attempted it, they didn't expect the people to say no. They expected, like in the old days, where they said, okay, cow it down like little sheep.
Right.
Yeah, so
you're seeing, you know, the real courageous people are the ones that stand in front of the tanks, you know. Not the people that go and fire the tanks, the people that actually stand in front of them. Because that's, you know, the whole world sees this. When the whole world has cameras on Red Square, it makes such a difference.
Yeah.
And that's what Yeltsin said. He said, you know, if you do anything here, if you massacre people or storm the federal building, the whole world will see it.
Yeah. It's not going to prove anything that you're a violent group of people.
Uh-huh.
That's all it's going to prove, you know.
That's certainly true. Listen, what do you think of what's going on in Brooklyn?
I don't know. I did get a chance to call last week, though, at the end of the show.
Yeah?
I talked for a few minutes about racism. I don't know. I feel that it's one thing about the thing with picking up what they call the private Jewish ambulance.
Yeah?
What's wrong with these ambulance drivers? I mean, you see two kids laying in the street bleeding, black or white. I mean, doesn't matter. You pick up the kid, you know?
Uh-huh.
Kid's got a life to lead. I mean, granted, you know, you don't want the old man to bleed, the guy who hit them. You don't want him to die. But, I mean, the kids got a life to live. You know, you pick them up.
Well, it seems to me, now, from what I've been told, they were directed by the police to pick up the, you know, the older guy to protect him from the crowd. It seems to me, though, that the police could have protected the guy from the crowd. I mean, that's their job. And the ambulance people could have worked together to try and save these kids.
Yeah,
it seems that, you know, that should have been the priority. This guy was not suffering from any life-threatening wounds. He just had an angry mob around him. Mm-hmm. The angry mob should have been controlled by the police.
Yeah, I think the crowd probably overreacted. Because, I mean, the guy ran away, but, I mean, you know, after he hit the kids. But they went too, because, I don't know, racism is just like that fine line, you know? I mean, anybody, you know, the slightest little incident could touch it off and make
right.
it.
Well, I know people that live there, and they all say the same thing. You know, we've been living side by side now since the 1930s, but mm-hmm. we've never gotten to know each other.
Mm-hmm.
They've just never bothered to get to know each other. And you got to ask yourself, you know, if you're out there and you're black or you're white, do you hang out with just people in your own group? Do you hang out with people with differing ways of life, differing habits and customs and beliefs? Because if you don't, then, you know, you face the same danger of falling into the trap.
Yeah, well, I heard, like, people have been saying, make sure, you know, get to go when you have black friends, you have white friends, we have Hispanic friends, get to know their culture and everything. I don't see it that way. I see it, people have other culture. You don't have to go out and dig in and deep and find their culture. What you should do is just respect it and
right.
know that it's different from yours and not just say it's different, it's wrong, I don't want to hear it.
Right.
That's
Well, it's good to understand, you know, bits and pieces of it, because that way, if some ignorant person says something, you can say, no, you're wrong. You know, this is how it works. This is how it is. You learn a little bit, and hopefully they learn from you as well.
Yeah. As long as, you know, respect other people's cultures, that's what it boils down to.
That's what it boils down to. It's something that I guess has been going on now for centuries, and we never seem to be able to get it right.
Yeah.
But that's what has to happen in Crown Heights is people have to get together. And you got to see blacks and Jews working, and you've seen it a little bit now, but you've got to see them working towards some kind of settlement of this, because it's so ridiculously stupid to have two oppressed minorities, you know, hurting each other.
Yeah.
It's wrong. It's always wrong to have that kind of thing happen.
Definitely.
All right, listen, I want to thank you for calling, and yeah, you certainly beat out Mr. Radio in talking about significant things. I'll give you that.
All right.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
632-6901. Good evening.
Hello, am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Greetings and salutations. Quiet on the set. It's the know-all, see-all, do-all of radio.
Yeah, speed it up.
It's Mr. Radio. I only have 3 minutes. I'm calling from a payphone in Lucky Point. Many things to banter on the...
Excuse me. Did you have to put 40 cents in, or was it 25 cents?
Yes, to call Stony Brook.
How much?
I just want to tell you...
Wait, how much was it again?
40 cents.
It was 40 cents, please. Please deposit 40 cents for the next 3 minutes.
Rick, please.
Yes.
Okay. The bottom line is, I'm coming to the station next week to be your guest for 2 hours. I'm going to, you know, arrive at the Student Union building.
Right.
You know, I'll call you before the show, and I'll come up and take some calls.
Okay, now, hold on. We need the number for the new locksmith that we have here. Seriously.
Everyone's calling about me. You know, I'm almost as big as Norm Dvoskin and Joe Chaffee.
Well, I don't think your personal size has anything to do with this. It's just a question of taste.
Eric, what do you have against, you know, you've never done a show about adult acne, and I'm very raged about this.
Well, yes, you would be the person to consider when talking about that subject, but...
Oh, God.
I don't know. I have a bad feeling about this.
Oh, God. Eric, do you shave...
only in self-defense.
I mean, I think you have a beard.
Uh-huh.
Do you have a beard? Are you a hairy gentleman?
I don't have to take this, you know. I don't have to take this. Look, how much time do you have left?
I have about a minute and a half.
All right.
The bottom line is, first of all, the people love me. I have many things to banter about. So, you know, do you want me to come down next week and do the 2 hours with you?
That's
the best polyester sports jacket.
This is incredible. In the other room, they are now. I assume this is you that they're burning in effigy, but they have just lit this little figure on fire, and he's like, he's really burning up. Actually, we're not supposed to burn things in that room, so
yes.
Why don't you put that out?
Do I take that as a yes?
No. Put it out now.
I'm booked.
Thank you.
I got News 12. I got an interview there. You know, I would like to take some calls and talk about radio entertainment.
All right, now they're hanging you in effigy. That's much more tasteful. I don't know. I can't guarantee your personal safety if you come down here based upon the reaction to that other staff member seemed to be having here just upon hearing your name.
Really? I'll bring some old disco records for Tony White.
I don't. Unless they're bulletproof disco records, I don't think they're going to do you much good.
I mean, so do you know a guy named Mr. Friedman from Smithtown? Did you go to Smithtown High School East?
No, I don't recall going there. But again, I don't recall anything before a certain period of my life, and there's a reason for that.
Or Raphael Fulchpe. These people were...
What? No, you might as well be saying strange names in a different planet's language. I have no idea who you're talking about.
Oh, people. If people talk about Mr. Radio, I've almost signed my new contract with the radio station. It's just about there. People, I love you people. I love you. I love Norm DeVosket.
Okay, well, I suggest you take that up with him.
Norm DeVosket for president.
I heard the click on the phone. That means your quarter is up or your 40 cents is up, and you'll soon be disconnected, as you just have been. Okay, 632-6901. We will have to work hard on that new lock that we were going to get. We didn't have the money for it, but I guess we'll just have to raise the money. 632-6901. Good evening.
Yeah, Eric.
Yeah, who's this?
Mike.
Hi, Mike.
I don't like that Mr. Radio guy at all.
Okay.
He kind of creeps me out a little bit.
Well, let's just pretend he doesn't exist. How's that?
Okay, I won't mention him anymore, but I had like a whole list of topics. He's going Norm DeVosket and dropping all these like non sequiturs that none of us are going to get. and he's got a silly voice and payphones and all that bad connection.
I don't even get cable, so I don't get anything.
Well, okay, good. Well, you know, neither do I. I don't know what a Norm DeVosket is. There's no Chauncey Howell, I bet, though.
No, I don't think he is.
So,
if he had not called, what would you be calling now to talk about?
A whole list of topics I was going to talk to you about. Okay, this is the one I want to tell you about. It's been a couple of weeks now, but they're still going around these, like, I'm not going to tell you the joke, but about that Pee Wee Herman and Jeffrey Donovan, like, these jokes in combination.
I'm sure we've all heard the joke.
I'm going to tell you the joke, but my friend is telling me this combination joke, but... And it gets to the punchline, and it doesn't make any sense at all. And I tell him, hey, you know, you're trying to be humorous, you're using two, you know, topical ideas and combine them, but the punchline does not work. So I say to him, hey, you know, it doesn't work. He gets really, really angry with me.
Uh-huh.
And he's got, like, no sense of humor. I'm like, what do you do with a guy who thinks he's really, really funny, but he's, like, not funny at all?
A bucket of cold water usually changes the subject. You're not talking about how non-funny he is, then you're usually talking about negotiations for lives and things like that.
Yeah, you know, it was a problem I was having with that.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I'm just trying to, you know, be diplomatic about it, you know, I'm just trying to give a little chuckle, say, okay, yeah, I'll go move on to the next subject, but he didn't want to do that. And he's like, you know, kind of poking me at it, and you're like, come on, did you get it, did you get it? Is it like one of those, you know... Maybe it's one of those, you'll go home later and you'll get it. I said, no, it don't make any sense. You know, like, it's a big problem.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, get a group of people together and see if anybody gets it. If nobody gets it, then he's got no one to blame but himself.
Because, like, sometimes I watch those French films, and I don't get those sometimes. But I think that's a different type of thing. You know, he watches them, too. He watches it and watch, you know, French watch a film, and we don't know what the hell's going on. But it's okay, because, you know, no one knows what's going on. I don't think the guy who made it knows what's going on. But this is, like, a simple, you know, setup and punchline, and it's not working at all.
Maybe he needs to tell it in French. You know, sometimes things get lost in the translation.
Well, he took French in high school. That's a possibility. I could talk to him.
Strong possibility. It does affect you sometimes. Listen, sir, we got other calls, so any other points you want to make?
Yeah, I really like the long-distance phone call this evening. I thought that it brought a good edge to the show, but that Mr. Radio guy just brought me down.
Okay, well, he's gone now, so you can come out of your closet and not worry.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks for calling. 632-6901. Good evening.
Uh-huh.
Sorry?
Mr. Radio for Pope.
Right. Good evening.
Oh, Eric, give Mr. Radio a shot, but I don't want to talk about that.
Good, don't. What's on your mind?
I want to talk about one of your favorite companies, New York Telephone.
Okay.
Okay, and a bill I recently got with a whole bunch of calls, about $50 worth of calls. these 550 numbers.
Oh, boy, those are fun, aren't they?
Right, that I never made, right? And I never made these calls to these 900 numbers for this money line for like $40.
Okay.
So I called New York Telephone up, and I told them I didn't make these calls. I'm not paying for it. And they acted really defensive with me, saying that they did because they were made from my phone, and they weren't. And the only way they could have been if somebody came into my apartment because I don't have any children. And to make a long story short, they credited my account and, you know, put a block on my number.
Which they have to do for free.
Right. Now, my question for you, Eric, is, and I know you're kind of an authority on this and computers and all that, is if I'm going to make these calls, how did they get on my number? Would it be like a fraud?
Well, it's, you know, it's not that hard to imagine how this could happen. I used to believe it was impossible for somebody to actually put calls on a phone bill. You know, this was not made on a calling card, right?
No, they told me it can't be made on a calling card. I only had made one call, but it was previous to the dates on the 900 number.
Right.
I used it to call someplace in Huntington, like at a pharmacy or something.
Uh-huh. The way the calls could have been made is a very simple way, something that's been going on for decades, and that is a crossed wire. I've noticed it a couple of times. I got a phone bill for a line that I have that's only used for incoming faxes. And all of a sudden, my fax machine apparently was calling people all over the country and speaking for various periods of time. And obviously my fax machine wasn't doing that. What happened was the phone company mistakenly had wired me up to somebody else's house so that when my phone rang, the phone also rang in that other person's house. You'll find if you ever move into a new place and you pick up the phone and your phone hasn't been installed yet, very, very often you will get somebody else's line when you pick up the phone.
That happened to me in another house I lived in, but I got my roommate's line downstairs.
Uh-huh. Well, now imagine something like that happening to you here. Then you could make calls that would show up on your roommate's phone bill, and the phone company would say, hey, you must have made those phone calls, and obviously he did not.
Right.
So if you can, you know, you shouldn't have to do this, but if you can prove that you were not anywhere near there, it's pretty obvious that it was not you. Also, another way to test that out is to call your number and see if anybody else picks up.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's how I figured out what was going on.
There, too, because people have told me they've called me up, and that I wasn't home, but I was home, and my phone never rang, and I was around.
Uh-huh.
And I have a machine, but I don't know if they were just lying to me or whatever.
Can I ask you what your exchange is? What's your first three digits of your phone number?
243. It's Deer Park.
243. That's electronic. You can get call waiting, right?
Yeah, I can, but I don't have it.
Uh-huh. There's all kinds of software problems that could occur. I mean, you know, somebody hitting the wrong key on a computer could make things show up on your phone bill. I've seen things happen where people get tons of phone calls in their phone bill that they did not make. And, of course, the phone company says it's impossible, but it is possible.
They really act defensive. I really didn't like their attitude.
Well, tell somebody that. Write a letter because they're not supposed to act like that.
Yeah.
They're definitely not supposed to. And also, if you notice 550 and 900 calls on there, there's probably other calls on there as well. Do you get local itemization?
Yeah, and that's something I never try to figure out how many calls I make in the additional minutes and all that.
Right.
They always jip me.
Well, they probably do, but the local itemization will at least tell you when calls are being made.
Now, the 550 doesn't. The 900 did.
Now, the 550 should show up on your local itemization along with everything else.
Yeah, well, it doesn't give a time, though.
On your regular bill, it does not give a time, but on the local itemization, it will. Do you pay an extra $1.50 to get local itemization?
No, I don't.
Okay, it's worth doing. Even though it's you know, really obscene to pay the phone company to tell you what calls you're making, that's the best way to do it. Another thing I might suggest is a device that Radio Shack sells called a call accountant. What that does is it tells you what numbers you're calling as you call them. So if you see that little thing go off, you know that somebody in your house has made a phone call. And it can also be used as proof that you did not make a phone call if you have this little printout that shows, you know, what calls were made and what calls were not made.
Uh-huh. Okay.
All right. Let us know if anything else changes, though, because, you know, the phone company should not get away with that.
On this 550, though, it was really weird because it was all this ethnic stuff that I would never call this, like New York City line, chat line,
uh-huh.
Urban 3 line. I don't even, you know, urban line. Come on.
Well, you know, somebody could come up to your house and patch a phone to the side of, you know, the building.
I was thinking it could be one of those telephone guys up in Burr Lane over here in Dick's Hill.
Sure, it could be that. It could be anything. You say you live in an apartment?
I live in a private house.
A private house. Well, there's still a place where the wire comes into your house. It can be tapped into. I mean, I've seen people do this. They can tap into lines. There's lots of places you can go to tap into play.
I don't know what they call it, but the thing that they usually put outside your house.
Right.
I have it in my house.
Uh-huh. But the wire comes from outside.
Yeah, the wire comes from outside, but I don't know what they called it, the network interface. I have that inside my house.
Right, that should be inside your house.
Yeah, the guy did me a favor, really. He was going to, like, put it outside.
Well, they're supposed to put it inside. Listen, sir, I got to get to a couple more calls real quick, so... Let us know if anything else changes, because I am interested in this kind of thing. All right. Let's try to get through these as quickly as possible. Good evening.
Like 3 or 4 weeks ago, I won a reggae CD on the woman who is filling in for your show.
Uh-huh.
I've yet to get it.
Well, if that's the only amount of time it was, that's about right. But what I can do is I can transfer you to our special message machine, and you can leave a message for Cindy there.
All right,
and then... leave your name and address and phone number. She'll get back to you. Okay?
All right, and I think that Mr. Radio is like a complete waste of time, and we should keep him off the air as much as possible.
Well,
he really never has anything to say.
Uh-huh. Well, that's an interesting point.
Just, have him come down to the show, and I'll wait in the parking lot and kill him if you want.
Okay, well, we appreciate the offer.
Okay.
But you'll probably have to wait in line with a bunch of other people. But let's transfer you over and take another quick call. Here we go. Transferring to the special secret line here.
Hello, this is the phone mail system. You may now release the call or hang up.
Okay, and we are releasing the call. Let's go to another call. Good evening.
Hi, what's up?
How you doing?
What's going on? Listen, how much time I got left?
About 10 seconds or so.
Oh, okay. It's a little too late to start a conversation on a topic.
Well, we might be able to continue it next week.
Oh, okay.
But what would the topic have been?
I want to know your opinion on graffiti.
Ah, yes, graffiti.
Art or vandalism?
Well, it depends what you're graffitiing, you know. And if you're graffitiing a work of art, then that's not too cool. If you're graffitiing something that's, blank, then that can be considered art in itself.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
All right. This is my feeling.
I'm enlightened.
All right. Thanks for calling. All right. Really quickly now, these last couple of calls. Good evening.
I hear Mr. Radio will be replacing Bob Klein on Walk FM.
Well, that's a real shock. Good evening.
Yeah, what do you think about how brazen and blatant these 900-number phone sex advertisements on television have become in the past several months?
Well, I don't know about blatant and,
Well, they're becoming more and more obvious as it's the fantasy line, it's a phone sex line. It used to be just, chat lines, and now it's becoming more and more... geared towards, the back of Hustler magazine type thing that we used to see, or still see.
Well, I think it's more preying upon people that fall for this kind of garbage. And I don't think it's fair because these are the people that can least afford to do this, people that should be getting out and socializing more. Instead, these commercials are encouraging them to just stay in and rack up huge phone bills. It's like... if you watch TV in the daytime, you see nothing but advertisements for 900 numbers that tell you how to get a job or a credit card or something like
that. Right, yeah, I see those, and, don't call us, I can't call you, that type of thing.
Because they figure that people watching TV at that time don't have jobs.
Yeah, man, it's weird if you're, working nights, and then, you got those strangest things you see. If you stay home in the day, you watch that, you see that, and you turn on the TV at night now, all I see is, fantasy line. You watch it like Joe Franklin show. It used to be Comac Motor Inn sponsored, and now all it is obviously this is, you're going to call up, this woman's going to talk dirty to you. And it seems, strange how much more, pretty soon they're going to be naked on the TV with the things hanging out.
Well, I'm sure that's something that we have to look forward to. Listen, we're out of time. Thanks very much for calling. I can't find my outro. So I'm just going to have to say goodnight, I guess, and have silence follow me because I can't find it anywhere. I've looked everywhere. Kibrit is up next with No Sound Test, and I don't know. Should I just hand it over to you since I can't find my outro?
We can't find it.
No, it's not there. I looked everywhere.
Let's see.
I could play somebody else's outro.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Well, let's see. How about the theme for critique, huh? Hey, you don't usually hear this. You usually hear this on Monday afternoons, but we're going to play it now just to confuse everybody. It's a good theme, too. This was Brain Damage. I'll see you again next week. It's also a very short theme. Okay, we're going to have to play a record now, then. Thanks a lot, Mort. Next time, pick a long theme. What's this, Natural Alternatives? Here we go.